show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's 2 o'clock in Philadelphia and time for the best show ever. Now, your starting lineup. Bring in the heat. Ricky. Botalico. Hunter. Brody. Jen. Gordo. And finally, your host, The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
Good afternoon, everybody. Best show ever here on 97.5, The Fanatic at NBC Sports Philadelphia. 610-632-0975 is the number to participate. A lot going on today, including 10-second songs. So let's get right to our opening statements. And right there, we have our word of the day. The word of the day today is Formula, because we have two teams currently playing, not including the very awesome Philadelphia Union, who are taking care of business. Now they just got to get to the playoffs to win the whole thing. You have the Eagles, who are still on a high with the Eagles. And now when you start to look around the conference, you see two other undefeated teams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have Tom Brady, and they're a formidable team, and the Giants, who you don't take overly serious. What is the formula for them to keep this going and possibly get the one seed in the NFC? What's the formula? What do they have to do? You saw through two games. What's the formula? What's the secret sauce? What is that thing that this team needs to do to get everything continuing and going down the stretch? Because as you look at the schedule, it's only been two games. And I know Jalen Hurts today said he doesn't run his social media, so he didn't really write that post. Everybody in that locker room can sense it. They look left and right, and they know that their team is good. And because of that, they're rightfully excited. And that's how it is. When you get around a bunch of talented people, you get on a natural high. That quarterback, Jalen Hurts, who's always against rat poison and stuff, I don't care if he did the post or not. The bottom line is that post doesn't go up without his approval or would it come down immediately. He's feeling good because he knows his offensive line is excellent. He knows his running backs are at least passable, if not better. He knows his wide receivers are awesome. He knows that his tight end is very good. And he knows after this week that his defense is pretty good and that they can still get better. He recognizes that. And that's why everybody's happy. And that's not a bad thing. We see it. They're seeing it. They're around each other every day. They know they're good. And he's been around good teams before. Maybe not in the NFL, but he was on those Alabama teams where there was all those All-Americans. He was on those Oklahoma team where there was all those, these guys were future first-round picks where there was the CeeDee Lamb types, those good players. He knows what it's like to be in a locker room with special players, and he's reacting to it like he should. What's the formula? What do you guys see? What has to happen for this to continue? Is it Gannon's continued improvement? Is it using Davis more? Is it not eating the rat poison, not getting too high, too low? Because now it's real. Because nobody's good. We didn't know going into the year, in the NFC at least, that no one was going to be good. Somebody's going to emerge maybe, but there's a real path. This is realistic now. What is the formula for this team? And then on the flip side, we have the Phillies. And we'll get into it today at some point because I'm tired of them. I'm tired of this team. I'm tired of all of them. I'm tired of Harper not paying attention. I'm tired of all of them. Three different managers. We get to this month of September, and it looks exactly the damn same. What formula is missing from this team so that this stops happening? And I know people have been, they were calling Anthony earlier, and they're saying, oh, well, just get in. They can still get in the playoffs. And look what the Braves did. They didn't have a lot of wins. Yeah, the Braves went 18-11 last year in September. Is this team going to go 18-11 in September? No. So please, just ahead of time, we love every caller at 610-632-0975. If you're going to compare them to the Braves, don't bother calling. I'm telling you, don't bother calling. This team is not last year's Braves team. You want to know why? Because they're not finishing like that. I am tired of every year. It's supposed to be different, and it looks exactly the same. Do not fire another manager. You got to look at who's on that team, who are the common denominators, and why are there no leaders on this baseball team. So it's two formulas today. One, what's the positive formula for the Eagles? Because I would love to be positive. And then the Phillies are doing everything they can to sabotage us and sabotage our happiness with another loss, five in a row. They have lost 16 of their last 20 games against teams over 500. 16 of 20. At what point do we say it's not the manager, it's not the owner, it's those guys? And which guys are there year after year after year? JT, who was 5 for 5, so I don't know what it is. Bryce Harper, Aaron Nola, the guys that are always there, why are they allowing this team every damn year to look exactly the same in September? I'm tired of it, and now we have to name names. Hunter Brody, how are you today?
Well, I'm doing fantastic because I'm thinking about the Eagles' positivity and their formula for at least this very moment before we get to the second formula. For me, it's simple. It's the quarterback play. When we were dissecting him after the Lions game and even throughout the offseason, we were talking about we want a quarterback that can rise to the occasion and be in the tier of a Pat Mahomes, of a Justin Herbert. And when you see him play the last 2 weeks, he is in that category. Surprise, surprise, the football team is where they're 2-0 and they're at the top of the NFC East. Now, there's a lot that also matters. Jonathan Gannon has to keep it up. He needs to dial up those timely blitz. He needs to stay active and put Darius Slay in fantastic positions to make it hell for opposing wide receivers. But without the quarterback play, it's not even a same situation that we're in now. So I wasn't here before. I wasn't here on the high, I'm saying, with Jalen Hurts. But I am now after that performance. So the ceiling has jumped to a level that I did not expect. I used to go into games wondering if he can succeed. I am now going into Sundays going, I can't wait to watch him succeed. And it's a great feeling to feel that way about the guy that has the ball in his hands majority of the time. So it's sensational from that perspective. With the Phils, dude, it comes down to this. They're weak. They're fragile. They're not mentally tough enough to win when the games matter most. How do you fix that? When your supposed leader, and I am calling him a leader because when you get paid $330 million, you organically become a face and a voice in that clubhouse. If you're not paying attention on second base in a 7-5 game when you could maybe make something happen, I know it got outrageous afterwards, but if you're not there ready for that particular moment and you fail for your teammates, everyone looks at you. And that's what we're seeing right now, and it's devastating. What's up, Ricky?
I think let's start with the Eagles. I think the questions, the negativity on certain things in training camp have now been answered. Jalen Hurts has answered the question. He can be a good quarterback in this league. He can get better and better each week. I think that to me, I mean, you look around the NFL, if you have a good quarterback, you're going to be in each and every game. I think that's first and foremost, so I agree with you on the Jalen Hurts thing. But I think Jonathan Gannon, man, oh man, did he turn things around in 1 week for this ball club? Can he continue to do it? I think that's going to be the biggest question as we move forward, because you don't want your defense giving up 30, 35 points a game, because that way you're not going to win many games. There's a lot of reasons why this Eagles team is good. I think weapons, number one. I mean, you have two great weapons at wide receiver. Miles Sanders is now becoming a weapon out of the backfield. So, and Darius Slay defensively has become a defensive weapon for you. I mean, put him in a category with Jalen Ramsey at this point. So all three of those things put together, I think that makes this Eagles team good, if not on the greater part of the NFC right now. And when you look at their schedule, that's the other favorable thing, because I keep going every single day to look at that schedule, and I come up with way too many wins. I mean, you can't even find too many losses in there, if at all. I mean, this is a team that has a favorable schedule. Everything's going in the right direction. And that will lead me directly into the Phillies, because you always hear me talking about walking up the rungs of a ladder. The Phillies have gone from the bottom rung early on in the season, and it was bottom rung because they couldn't have gone any further deeper with Joe Girardi as the manager. Thompson steps in and things start getting a lot better. Now they start falling back down the rungs. I mean, they went like from the fifth step. Now they're down to the third and falling down to the second rung. I don't like what I'm seeing from this team. You want to be on a high going towards the playoffs. There is a very good chance that they still make the playoffs. A very good chance. I'm not going to sit there and sugarcoat that. But when you look at it, do you really want to back into this playoff thing? Or do you want to kick it in gear and get things going in the right direction? That's where I stand with this team. There's many reasons that we can go over why they are where they are right now. But I also agree with Hunter in the sense that you need some leadership. And I find it awfully funny that Bryce Harper, when he was out, everybody seemed to stand on their heads. Now all of a sudden he comes back. Is everybody kind of taking the month off? Correct. That can't be.
You're absolutely right there. I'm tired of it. At some point, we have to look at Reese Hoskins is in there too. Reese, JT, Nola, Harper. You're the guys that have been here for years. And every year, September looks the same. One of you guys is going to have to figure out how to lead this team to the damn postseason strongly and not just hope that the Brewers lose a bunch of games and you back in all soft. I'm just tired of it.
But it absolutely sucks that we're sitting here on an Eagles high and a Phillies low, and it's a teeter-totter all the time. I get it going in the right direction. For some reason, this Phillies team was good a little bit over a month ago. Now, all of a sudden, they can't beat anybody. I mean, and Tyrone, I've seen your tweet. I've heard what you said about them against 500 team. It's not good. It's not pretty. The only hope that we have is that crazy things happen in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, that crazy things happen, but unfortunately for us, sometimes the better team just goes out and wins. It's not going to be fun. But we had 10-second song today, and we'll talk to Tim McManus about the Eagles with the Midweek Report at 4. Jason Stark around 4:30 talking about this baseball situation. We have 10-second song today. Everyone that gets a correct answer will get the FanFest tickets. But we have incredible prizes. First, we have two people. We'll get a $50 gift card for B&B Beverages, the beer and cigar superstore located in historic Doylestown. Check out B&B Beverages, huge selection of craft beers, and a bigger cigar selection than most cigar stores. Visit bnbbeverages.com. Two winners will get that. Three winners, if you still believe in this baseball team, will win tickets to see the Phillies take on the Braves this Friday at 7:05. It's the last weekend to catch the Phillies at Citizens Bank Park before the big road trip as they make a final push for the playoff spot against their big rival. And that game, let me tell you, it will be an important game. It literally must be. It will be an important game. For tickets, go to phillies.com. So two winners will win the B&B beverages. Three winners will win the Phillies tickets. And we'll talk about it. You can pick if you're at 610-632-0975. If you're in a good mood, we'll talk Eagles. If we're in a bad mood, we'll talk Phillies. And we'll be back here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
And on the line right now with the Midweek Report, covers the Eagles for ESPN.com and 97.5 The Fanatic, is Mr. Tim McManus, and he's brought to us by
my sportsbook app of choice, the new BetParks app. Everything you want in a digital casino and sportsbook in one sleek app. Must be 21. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Tim, how are you today?
Doing great, Ty. What's going on with you?
Man, we're feeling good about the Eagles, at least. The Phillies, we're not feeling good about. But first things first, there's a lot of enthusiasm around the city right now regarding this team. And it's two games in, so being that you're the wise sage, you're the reporter, is the enthusiasm too high, or are you seeing the same things that a lot of the people are seeing, that this team has a possibility of being really, really good?
Yeah, well, it's kind of both. Like, we've seen 2-0 starts evaporate in this town. We have seen it go the other way. You know, so it's, of course, I mean, you know, if they go into Washington and they lose, the sky is going to be falling, and neither is actually true. Like, they're not, you know, stamped for the Super Bowl. And if they drop one that they're supposed to win coming up over the next couple of weeks, it doesn't mean that the season's going to be a total disaster. But that's the fun of football, right? There's only 17 of these bad boys. People get amped up for them. You live and die by each game. And that's fun of it. And now two in a row, two very impressive wins, or one impressive win, but two impressive offensive performances, I guess we should say. And the town has right to be psyched. And here's additional reason why the town should be excited. Because when we came into the season, what was it all about? Like, what was the framing? It was a very talented roster. The big question was, could Jalen Hurts rise to the moment? Could he match the rest of the town on this roster and make it a legitimate NFC contender? And through two games, he's been their best player. Like, he's been the best player on the field in both games that he's played in so far. He completed 84% of his passes against Minnesota. You know, can he be an accurate passer? All those things. Like, he's doing the things, like, he's answering some of the questions, at least in a small sample size, that really was holding people back to begin with, you know, questions that were unanswered. And so, yes, people, you know, don't exactly, you know, put your chair down at the parade route just yet. But yeah, be excited about this start, and be excited because Jalen Hurts is maximizing his ability and kind of, hitting what people thought would be his potential.
Yeah, one thing that impressed me is you saw the way the Lions played him defensively by sending a lot of pressure, and he was able to utilize his legs to kind of counter that. And then this week, it was all about the throwing, and he used his arm to beat the way that Minnesota was handling things. So, you know, what kind of stood out to you with this, just the way that he played kind of against Minnesota, though?
Yeah, I think it's a great point, Hunter, because I remember coming off of that Lions game, I was saying, you know, I wouldn't play Hurts that way. I wouldn't be blitzing him 15 times like they did week one. I thought it's more like you try to contain him, you make him be a passer. And Minnesota kind of largely did that. And Hurts was able to rip him up 26-31 for 333 yards. And so that was obviously like the most impressive thing to me was the way that he was able to function in the pocket. And there was a lot of these throws that he had to make, like really sharp, accurate passes on time, where there was just a small window in Minnesota's zone where it had to be there, and it had to be there now, and it had to be there like right on the hands of the wide receiver. And he was making those. That wasn't something that he was doing at a high level, you know, even a year ago. So the massive jump that he had in that realm was really what stood out to me.
All right, you think about defensively, they blitzed Kirk Cousins and the Vikings 10 times last week. What do you expect blitzing-wise against Carson Wentz this week coming up? / how important is it for that defensive front to start putting pressure on the quarterback?
Yeah, well, I think that it is important. The fact that Gannon sort of changed his approach was very encouraging if you're an Eagles fan. And what we had saw really for the better part of a year plus out of Gannon was too passive of a style of plays, where the defensive backs were playing too far off in coverage and he wasn't blitzing a lot. And the end result is quarterbacks just being way too comfortable in the pocket and being able to execute kind of in the short to intermediate area and just chew up the Eagles defense that way. But they did things differently against the Vikings. You saw the corners really challenging what is a gifted Minnesota group of wide receivers. Darius Slay obviously having an exceptional game going up against Justin Jefferson, but it was also schematically why that was happening. Gannon had some designs in his defense where he was bracketing Jefferson. He found ways to, basically like have de facto like double teams on him in certain situations. The times where it was one-on-one, Slay really stepped up, and Kirk Cousins was never able to really get a rhythm as a passer. One, because the defensive backs were challenging, and two, because Gannon was dialing up some like opportunistic, creative blitzes that was throwing Minnesota's offensive line and Kirk Cousins off balance a little bit. So credit where it's due. Gannon's been getting a ton of heat, all of it's been deserved, but he steps up and responds in a major way. And we know what Wentz is, that he holds on to the ball a little bit too long, and he'll wait you know, just that extra half a second in order to make the big play. The downside of that, as we have seen, Indianapolis has seen, and Washington has seen in a short sample, is that, you know, pressure can get home to him. Like, you can make a strip fumble there, force him into a bad pass. And so that's all to say, do the same thing. You know, make sure you're pressuring those wide receivers. Make sure that you're up close to them and you're making Wentz hold on to the ball just a half a second longer. That way, I think, you know, the defensive front should get home and force Wentz into some bad decision making.
I want to talk to Tim McManus, covers the Eagles for ESPN.com and 97.5 The Fanatic. Tim, when you look at the interior linemen, there are people out there who are been questioning Hargrave and Fletcher Cox so far, and obviously it didn't matter as much. They've been blitzing. They've been getting, you know, they found other ways in week two. They weren't great in week one. How much do both of those guys, from your observation, have left? And will that transition with Jordan Davis and Milton Williams and the younger guys need to continue as the season goes on based on what you've observed?
Yeah, it's a good question, Ty. You know, especially in that first game, the interior defensive starters left a lot to be desired. You know, Cox in particular, like when I started focusing him on tape, I was like, ah, not great. And I thought that he improved against Minnesota. Really, you know, the entire front did. I mean, you saw that, you know, the run fits were much better. They did a very good job against Dalvin Cook and limiting an explosive playmaker there. And, you know, Cox was able to get after the quarterback a little bit. And so it was improved. But I think that our expectations generally should be downgraded when it comes to Cox. Like, his last dominant season was 2018. I don't think that version is coming back. But that's not to say that he doesn't have anything in tank. It's just he and Hargrave need to produce a little bit more consistently. And, yes, they do have depth. They do have some up-and-comers. And I think what you saw on Monday was that Jordan Davis was – involved early. Like, when I looked at the halftime snap distribution, they had Jordan Davis. It was like he was close to 20 snaps in the first half compared to 5 for Williams. And then that balanced out in the second half once they were able to pin their ears back a little bit more on Cousins, and Williams ended up getting the bulk of the snaps. And so that seems like a good formula to me, like early and often with Jordan Davis, while you're slowing down the run and the opposition, it has a balanced attack, and then you let the other guys fly after the ball, shoot the gaps, and and pressure the quarterback up the middle.
It's only 2 weeks, but I definitely expected a bigger impact from Hassan Reddick. I don't love the fact that he's getting dropped back at times, but is this more just his personal play that it hasn't been as loud, or is it Jonathan Gannon and the usage, or maybe a combination of both?
Yeah, he hasn't been dropped back in coverage a ton, but it does really stick out when he does. And of course, you know, the reason that they paid him was to attack the quarterback, and him basically doing anything else is, you know, and it almost feels like a waste, right? Like he's a pass rusher. It took several years for defensive coordinators to figure that out. And he was, you know, acting as a linebacker. And then once they realized, like, no, this guy's a pass rusher, you know, it's double digit sacks. The fact that he hasn't been as active in the pass rush to this point, is not, like, you don't want to go overboard saying that it's concerning, but you do have to put some of it on Gannon, where it's like, all right, well, if the last two stops figured out, like, how to unlock this guy as a pass rusher, you know, you got to get that going too. You know, so it's still a bit of a work in progress. Sometimes these things come in streaks. Well, you'll see all of a sudden a pass rusher, you know, have two sacks in the game. They start piling up over the course of 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm not overly concerned about it, but obviously you want to see the production getting going, like, soon, like Sunday.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Tim, thank you so much for the information. As usual, things are off to a good start. Let's hope we can be this happy all season long when we talk to you on the midweek report.
Either way, look forward to talking to you on Wednesday. Thanks, Ty.
Thanks so much.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
The Hall of Famer Jason Stark on the line, brought to us by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks. Everfresh, nature's refreshment. How are you today, Jason?
Hey, Tyrone. I'm doing well, my friend.
Well,
how's everything there?
Well, you know, I mean, all right, Jason, we need you because we're seeing this another September. Third different manager, yet this September looks just like all of the other Septembers. I have reached it. I'm not trying to speak for anybody else on the show, that sometimes you have to look at the guys, the common denominator guys, and look at them because something's just off with this team. Why does this keep on happening, Jason?
Am I allowed to answer that it's Philadelphia? There's going to be pain. This is what we do here, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is now officially painful. Tyrone, I would think that you'd be used to this by now.
I know. You're right. I think they're too good for this to keep on happening.
Yeah, all right. I don't think that all Septembers are the same, or all slumps are the same, or all collapses are the same, even when the results might make them seem like they're the same. I honestly think that they're going to hang on because the Brewers aren't very good, despite what's happening in Milwaukee in the last few minutes, where they have this big lead on the Mets now. They're not very good. They have an easier schedule, but the Phillies are better. So I do think there's that. But here's what we were talking about last night at the park. And when you look at the Phillies, I think the question is this what they are now, or is this just how they're playing now? And I think there's some of both. But to answer that, you have to sort out what's real and what's just normal ebb and flow. And I thought about that a lot today. The bullpen issues are real. Since Sir Anthony went down, they have the second worst bullpen ERA in baseball. It's just under 6. You know, I was there last night. That the only pitcher who didn't give up a run in that game was Garrett Stubbs. And how long is the list of relievers that you still trust? Like, who's on that list? Sir Anthony, Robertson, Eflin, Alvarado, or not even them? So those are big questions that the manager's got to deal with every night. Beyond that, I think Kyle Gibson's issues are real. I think Noah Syndergaard's issues are real. The league has adjusted back to him. I think the rotation has felt the weight that has been placed on it this season. Fourth most batters faced in the league by starting pitchers. I think the scenarios where the offense and defense are better are easier to see, but the pitching, and especially the bullpen, not so much.
Jason, last night, Bryce Harper in a 7-5 game was caught on second base with a pretty bad mental mistake. How serious of an issue is this, that the your guy is making that type of error out there?
Well, that seemed like a really big mistake at the time. And if you knew they were going to give up 18 runs, you'd think it's really along the lines of the many base running mistakes that Bryce has made trying to be over aggressive since he's been here. But, I think the point of your question is I think you're asking if he's feeling pressure to do the things he was brought here to do, especially now in this time, in this setting where he knows what he's being paid and expected to do. And I think the answer to that is absolutely. I don't know how much that base running mistake was part of that, but when you watch him at the plate, I know he got 2 hits last night, but like watches at bats, I would describe them as jumpy. And somebody said something to me a few days ago that I've been wondering about, that guys who are coming off a hand injury and jump out like that are doing it because they don't want to get jammed. And so whether his thumb is still sore or whether that injury is still in his head or some of both, I can't answer that, but he needs to be better. He's 179 in September, twice as many strikeouts as hits, fewer homers than Nick Maton, and that's not what he's been brought here to do.
All right, let me just start by saying, Jason, I don't believe in the position players pitching like last night. I think that's becoming a big joke around Major League Baseball. But anyways, hopefully that won't happen. Yeah, hopefully that won't happen anymore, at least not tonight, because Zach Wheeler's finally back. What are your expectations for him?
Ricky, I don't know what you think. I think this is one of the most important nights of the Philly season. I don't think you're going to see a lot of pitches from Zach Wheeler. Maybe three innings, might be as little as two. But when you think about how much he struggled early in the season after his first health scare in right in spring training, like if you see that Zach Wheeler again, that to me would be scary. If he's vintage Zach Wheeler, even if it's for two or three innings, I think that whole team will take a huge sigh of relief. Because in the big picture, it's obvious. They need him to start and dominate a game one. They need to find a way to clinch this playoff spot before that last series in Houston so Aaron Nola doesn't have to start one of those games. Because if he does, then I think the rotation lines up. It would be Wheeler game one, but Nola not until game three. We've said this a million times. Their only formula to get through that first round is Wheeler and Nola in games one and two and being great in games one and two. And the more games they lose, I think it makes that more challenging because he's lined up to pitch right now in the last series of the year.
Talking to Jason Stark, the Hall of Famer, writes for The Athletic. Everybody should be reading this stuff. I don't know what you're doing if you're not. But Jason, we'll go back to the Phillies in just one moment. But there's a historic thing happening in the AL with one Aaron Judge. I remember the steroid era stuff. But when everybody was hitting home runs and everybody was doing it, it kind of felt a little diluted. What are we seeing from this guy? Because I don't think people are, because the Yankees went on that losing streak for a while or that swoon, I don't think people are necessarily paying close enough attention to just how special a season this guy's having.
Yeah, just on the part about his season, I spent some time today digging into his season for my column on Friday, and I think I've concluded it. This is one of the greatest offensive seasons that we've seen since we've been walking around the planet. When you compare his year to how much better he has been than the rest of the league, I think it only compares with Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, guys like that. And I don't say that lightly, but this is a magic show. And then just with what we're seeing with these home run numbers, he's put the magic back in some of the home run numbers that were ruined by the PED era. Tyrone, I saw Mark McGwire's 60th home run live in St. Louis, and I mean, I didn't know then what I know now, but to see somebody hit a 60th home run was a goosebump moment in that time and place, and then the whole PED thing obliterated that. But last night, that was a goosebump moment again to watch him hit number 60. 61 will be another one. 62 will be another one. Those are cool numbers again because of Aaron Judge. He's towering over his sport right now, and I am totally absorbed in it.
It's incredible, Jason. And just to follow up on that, The significance, not so much that the fact that he's doing it on a contract year, like with all his back to the wall. You know, you're a guy who's written books and things like that. Will that add to it, not so much from the fan perspective, but from like the player perspective or the franchise's type perspective, that a guy's doing it when his back was to the wall and he needed to do it?
You know, that's such a great point because this comes up all the time when you talk to other people in baseball about Aaron Judge. You know how much guts it takes to do what he did? To turn down one of the, at least by average salary, one of the biggest contract offers in the history of the sport and say, no, I'm going to do more than that. I'm going to be worth more than that. I am going to show the world. And then to have this season, Who's had a better contract season, a better walk year than this? Tell me anybody. Seriously.
I can't top it. And that's just why I know we've been upset with the Phillies, but this is really special. And I knew you would be able to put it in perspective. Well, thanks so much, Jason. Hopefully next week when we're talking to you, they didn't just lose all four games to the Braves and get swept again. Because at that point, even you will probably be a little bit panicked about the Phillies' chances. But right now, math is still on their side. So I appreciate, as usual, you bringing all the logic that you always bring.
Okay, boys. Hang in there. Hang in there.
Thanks so much, Jason. Talk to you next week.
Hang in there.
All right. That was Jason Stark.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.